I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Michelle Ray joins me now, the renowned public speaker and consultant, is on to talk about her new book, Lead Yourself First, Breakthrough Strategies to Live the Life You Want. It's a compelling read because Ms. Ray talks about her own life story, as well as those of others, making an interesting entry into the necessary advice readers will need to making a better life for themselves, leading their own lives, and eliminating fear and the fear of failure. I'll get Ms. Ray to tell us about this book. She has a busy schedule of speaking engagements and is the founder and CEO of the Lead Yourself First Institute. She was born in Australia and lives here in Vancouver. The website's for more at leadyourselffirst.com and michelleray.com. The book is published by Red Carpet Publications. Please welcome to the Plant on the Land program, Michelle Ray. Ms. Ray, good morning.
Hi there, Joe. How are you?
Very good. Yourself?
Excellent. Thank you.
So, right off the bat, who is this book for?
Well, I really think that this book is for individuals who are finding themselves at the crossroads. They're on the precipice of making some kind of change in their life, personal or professional, and they're just stuck and they can't seem to find a way to get unstuck. And there's also relevance to businesses and organizations who are finding themselves in the same position. And in both cases, they want to create change. They want to be able to rise to the current challenges of the economy, but they're not entirely sure how to make themselves stand out and do things differently.
Now, we live in a time of, as you just said, current challenges of, you know, the economy. We're coming out of a recession, depending on who you talk to. Is this the right time to take stock and perhaps make a big change?
Well, I think that is really a really great question, and I believe when is the wrong time? When is it not the right time? I think that when things are so volatile, then it's understandable that people prefer the status quo. But sometimes the greatest changes have happened in times of uncertainty. And, you know, there are many excellent business examples throughout history of people like Disney and others who, you know, really took unbelievable risk even when the economy and everything was pointing in the other direction not to do so. So if you believe in yourself enough and you really follow through on your dreams and your goals, I think you can create opportunity for yourself no matter what the current economy or circumstances might be.
I was just thinking to myself, because you always hear people, you know, like, well, I'm not going to do anything big. I'm not going to make any big purchases or make a big change in my life until the economy gets better, until it's more stable, less volatile. But I can't really think of anybody that decides to make a change when things are good, because things are good, right?
That's right. We get very comfortable when things are good. It's when things change that we find ourselves thinking, oh, no, you know, how am I going to cope with this? And I've been there, and I know there are times where I thought to myself, where am I going to, you know, where's my next business going to come from? You know, where are my next clients going to come from? And it's really scary, but you can't give up. You have to keep going.
What have you found from your own experience as well as people that you've talked to? What has to happen in one's life that would want one to lead one's own life?
Well, I think that every time something happens, it is a sign. And it's how you interpret what happens to you as an opportunity or a challenge that is, you know, negative or positive. So it's how you deal with the events as they happen and your attitude around those events and about yourself that will lead you to take a particular course of direction or not. It'll either cause you to freeze or it'll cause you to say, you know, now's the time for me to do something different. And it really depends on where people are at emotionally, financially, but I really think a lot of it is psychological too.
So we do lack, say, confidence, the skills to deal with the sort of the emotional issues surrounding all of this, and just as much as we do, say, the opportunity to make change, right?
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, if you, and I mentioned this in my book, if you look at the word resilience and how many times people Google that word, I mean, it comes up millions of times in searches. And I think, you know, from what I've learned and from what I've discovered and researched is that resilience is innate. We all have the ability to be resilient. And there have been, you know, recent examples again in, you know, in tragic times where people have dug deep into their own opportunity to be resilient, to practice what I call being fearlessly persistent. So, you know, we have that inside of us, and perhaps sometimes everything else is excuse making. And, you know, I think for me, my greatest role models in that regard have been my parents, who went through unbelievably challenging times, you know, not only with the war, but also, you know, with a number of recessions in their lifetime. And my father was always the eternal optimist. So it can make you stronger. You can go through these challenges and be stronger as a result.
You dedicate the book to your parents, right?
I do, yes.
Yeah. You mentioned about, you know, the propensity that we have to make excuses. One of them is blaming others for sabotaging us. So is failure something that we're responsible for? I mean, it is easier to blame someone else, right?
Oh, it's always easier to blame someone else, to look outside. But I think, you know, again, how you can, you know, what are your perceptions around the word failure? And if you look at most successful people, and to me, you know, success can be defined in many ways, and it's not all about material success. But if you look at people who have had some kind of obstacle placed in their way, inadvertently, I mean, some of them, tragedy has happened to them of some kind, but they don't consider that every time they try something, they fail. In fact, they just want to keep trying again. So it's really a question of perspective. And you mentioned the word fear, and fear is a very powerful emotion. And it's, to me, the most paralyzing of all emotions that we feel. And I think we create a lot of our own fear. We worry about things that, you know, don't even happen a lot of the time.
Regret, that's something that affects one's life.
Absolutely.
It can be toxic, though.
Regret absolutely can be toxic. I mean, there's very little point to it, but from time to time we all indulge in it. And I think that, you know, yes, I've met people in my life and there have been a few things I've regretted too, but there are some people who regret not doing certain things at a certain age, and then they come to the conclusion that, you know, all is lost, the opportunity's gone, and it's too late. So that can be very that can destroy your soul, that kind of thinking.
Now, is being the leader of one's own life, is that striking out and putting up your own business?
It can come in many forms, Joe. I think one is definitely for the entrepreneur, but in other respects it can apply to someone who may not necessarily be seeking to leave their job or necessarily be dissatisfied with their job, but maybe they're having some kind of relational challenges, they've got difficult management, people that they're working with, and they find it hard to take charge of themselves. So you can apply the term leadership in any of those situations, because my definition is that it's all about character. Leadership is about character. Leadership is a mindset. Leadership is not a title. It's all these other things that make somebody the leader of their own life.
The sense that I get from having looked at the book and hearing you now is that this is for someone, the book is for someone who is perhaps, you know, in adulthood. How do you find young people, and are they attuned to some of the things that you're talking about?
Absolutely. I mean, you wouldn't believe how many people, young people, and also the parents of young people, you know, will come up to me and they'll buy the book for them, and they feel that they need it. You know, they need it early on in their careers so they can be better prepared for the kinds of challenges that I talk about in my book. And, so they're very receptive to it. But it is also true that when you're talking about younger generations, their attitude to change is very different to, you know, older generations or baby boomers, because change has been the norm for that younger group. So maybe they're more comfortable with it in many respects.
What I found interesting when I flipped to the back of the book is that even though you have a pretty good roadmap for the reader in the book, you still want to hear from folks about their experience and their life. And there's a website where people can email you or talk to you about their own circumstances, right?
Yes. What I really want to do is I want to encourage people who've read the book or heard me present to tell me their own story. So I call it Tell Me Your Story. I want to hear of their successes. I want to hear about instances where, as a result of hearing my message or reading about it in my book, they've been inspired to lead themselves in some way. That's why I have the Lead Yourself Lead Yourself First Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's going to morph into something pretty extraordinary when we keep hearing about these amazing things that people have done to start leading themselves.
That's the instructive thing here, I think, is that people look to you as an example for advice, for a direction, yet you don't stop learning yourself. And you
never
don't
stop learning.
Yeah, you never stop learning from other people's circumstances because that eventually sustains you, right?
Yeah, I think we're all lifelong learners. I consider myself to be one. There'll never be a day where I can say I know it all. And I think the other really important distinction with this book is it doesn't have a Pollyanna type of ending. You know, it's life. There are peaks and valleys in life, and I don't pretend that it's any other way. And I don't always have all of the answers, but I have some suggestions. And, you know, I think people really appreciate that. So, you know, things don't always go the way that we think they're going to go, but it doesn't have to necessarily be the be-all and end-all, and there are ways to move on from that.
And someone who's an example of that, and someone who wrote you, Stan Lindley.
Yes,
did I get the name right?
You did.
Yeah, you talk about him in a chapter in the book. He ran into you once. I guess he was in an airport or something like that?
Yeah. You know, exactly. And the amazing thing about my encounter with Stan is that in the book there's an email at the beginning and there's an email right at the very end. So he has the first and the last word. And Stan was an individual that I think is like so many of us, you know, a hardworking guy who was always doing what he can to put his best foot forward, to represent himself well. He was dealing with the public day in and day out, and as a result came across all different types of moods, but he always approached everything with an attitude of optimism. And then unfortunately himself, you know, he suffered his own, you know, from his own issues and ill health, and, you know, talks about being the disgruntled employee, and I think a lot of people are going to relate to Stan's story.
Yeah, people should pick it up for that. I mean, it's just it's a remarkable sketch of life there that one sees in the correspondence you have with him.
Yes.
And the own learning that you got from it, and all you did was smile at him, right?
Exactly. And I think that with our crazy busy lives, unfortunately, these encounters that we have with people, in general, they're so fleeting. When we have a special moment with someone who might be a complete stranger, I don't think we often take the time to reflect on it. Unless, as I say about Stan, unless you're lucky enough to get some kind of reminder about that meeting. And in my case, it was a series of emails, so we stayed in touch.
Yeah. Now, the perception that we have, or I guess how society values money and success, that really can mess with one's head, and not just because we as individuals have different, say, we value it differently. What insights have you got into how to approach that in one's life?
Well, I think that it is such a hot potato. You know, you'll love my Bob Dylan quote, "Money doesn't talk, it swears." And quotation, I should say.
Yeah.
And I think the really interesting thing, Joe, is that when people look at the subject of money, they often look at it in a very logical way. Oh, you know, I need to be more skilled at managing my finances, and, you know, I need to learn how to balance my books if I'm running a business. But I wonder how often people ever sit back and think about why they have certain values around money. Where did those ideas come from? Because unless you can understand why you think the way you think about money, you can't have a healthy relationship with it if you've never had a healthy relationship with it. So, again, the impact of a variety of influences on our value systems, particularly around the ideas of money and success, are so profound. And again, if you can break through and understand your own attitudes around those things, I think you can realize, hey, this is not working for me anymore, or, you know, maybe no wonder I react to certain things the way I do. And it's very powerful insight when you have that insight.
Well, when you talk to people, when you counsel them or they come to you for help, what's the main thing that people ask you around this time? I mean, does it have to do with finances?
Not always, no. I think a lot of times it depends where I am. So if I'm in a professional setting where I've just given a workshop or a presentation, sometimes people will ask a question publicly, and, you know, the benefit then is that the rest of the group will get to hear the answer. But some of them come up to me and they want an answer privately. I often hear about people wanting to have better relationships with their colleagues, and they want to go deeper in terms of understanding other people, and you know, some of them just want to take that risk again of trying something different in their life, so they'll talk to me about that. It's amazing how many times people will come up and say, I really have an interest in this, but I don't know how to go about making it happen for myself, or I don't think it's the right time, or, you know, what do you suggest? So they're looking to create change.
Yeah. Now, I understand you were in a competition recently. It was in Texas, I guess, the next great public speaker or something like that? Or?
That's right.
Yeah. how did you do?
Well, I reached the top 10.
Yeah.
I never found out exactly what my ranking was,
uh-huh.
but it was quite the experience to be selected from thousands of people and have the opportunity to put my skills on the platform, albeit for only 3 minutes, which really isn't very long to impress anybody, and get my message across in a very short period of time. But if we can do it in Twitter with 140 characters, I guess people are expecting that we can, you know, change the world with a powerful message in 3 minutes. That was an opportunity by the eWomen Network, and they're the largest networking group in the world, and yeah, it was quite an extraordinary time.
Yeah, now that's something that people fear, public speaking, is they fear that more than death.
Yeah.
Is that something that you were adept with from the get-go, or is that a skill that you had to hone and exercise here?
You know, it's a great question. I never had a fear of public speaking. As soon as I realized that that was where my skill set was, then I just threw myself into it. And I never really, you know, there were times where in front of what I consider to be a pretty significant presentation that I might feel some anxiety, but I think you have to feel some adrenaline. If you feel absolutely nothing, I don't think that's going to propel you into delivering a great speech. But I guess I'm one of the lucky ones that I've never been lost for words when the time has come or I've been required to say something.
I've found that in my own experience that, I mean, it's something that you know, terrifies me from time to time. But it's something, it is a skill that if you work on it, you can overcome a lot of these sort of niggling fears and the sort.
You can overcome a lot of those fears when you realize that the audience is just like you, that the people that are watching you in whatever manner in which you're presenting yourself, whether it's in a business meeting or giving a presentation or speaking in front of a large crowd, they want you to be successful. It's just that we don't always realize that. And if you learn how to connect with an audience through storytelling, then you will make the most powerful points. But it's the stories and how people feel when they hear you that they remember more than anything else.
You tell your story in this book, Lead Yourself First, about coming to Vancouver. Well, what's kept you here over the years?
Well, I guess I was always drawn here. Maybe I never understood initially why the pull was so strong, but I'm very happily married, and so that's definitely one reason for me to be sticking around.
Yeah.
And Canada and Vancouver's been very good to me. I fell in love with British Columbia 23 years ago, and I just never could get it out of my system. So, you know, I was like one of the many Aussies who went on a one-year visa and traveled around Canada, and then I thought, I just don't want to go home. So, again, another long story, but eventually, life went this way, and I'm very happy that I'm still here, and I've been able to build my business here. I arrived in Canada, and within 15 months, I was self-employed.
You know, I looked at your Twitter feed the other day, and went through it, you know, into last fall, and it seems like you're speaking everywhere. it's a lot of travel, your line of work?
A lot of travel, but I love it. I'm going to Dublin very shortly. In fact, on Friday I'm speaking in Montreal, and then I'm heading over to Ireland to speak to a group about leading yourself through change and uncertainty, and they just really love the message. So it's just an amazing opportunity, and again, I've worked with some very brilliant people who have helped me to position myself with my website and my message, and I just knew that this message of leading yourself was going to be very successful. So we're constantly branding, reinventing ourselves. It's never going to end. And just like any product or service, speakers have to do the same thing.
Exactly. I mean, that's something that, I mean, we think once we've reached a certain level of success or the success that we want, that it's finished. But it's not, right?
Never ending.
This is an interesting book, and I know a lot of people have been buying it already, but continued good luck anyway, because I'm sure there are many, many others who ought to pick it up and should.
Thank you so much, Joe. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
You're very welcome. The book is called Lead Yourself First, Breakthrough Strategies to Live the Life You Want. It's published by Red Carpet Publications. Visit the websites michelleray.com and leadyourselffirst.com for information on Michelle. And this book, Michelle Ray, on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.